Welcome to Share a Pint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host.
Today we're with Ben Hunter from Denison's Brewing Company. Thanks for being on the show, Ben.
Thanks for having me.
When you and I spoke at the Baltimore Craft Beer Festival, you mentioned that your brewery had a model that was unique to the area and presented some interesting challenges. So tell us about that whole experience.
Sure, yeah. So we have three owners here, and Julie Verratti kind of grew up, was born and raised in the area, and her wife Emily, they've been living here for a long time. They kind of saw a need in the area for just a local gathering place, somewhere where people could get food and beer, where families could come out together. So when they started looking to plan a model and get a business plan together, trying to have to distribute through the county, through the Department of Liquor Control, just presents some problems, and the margins are tough for a new company. So they looked into, Julie and Emily to some degree had kind of worked in some politics, and Julie worked for the Small Business Association. So she kind of worked together and was looking to get the laws changed. So they started lobbying, and the idea was to allow for breweries to self-distribute their own products, okay, up to a certain amount of barrelage. So that really opened the door for a smaller brewery to be able to make the margin. Because essentially what we wanted to do was be a production brewery. We wanted to wholesale, but we also wanted to have a brew pub, kind of a tap room experience.
Okay.
You had some brew pubs in Montgomery County previous to this, but never anybody that had kind of been that model also a production brewery.
Okay, great. Well, since you touched on that a little bit, tell me a little bit more about what it means to be the first production brewery, how it kind of changed some things or helped some things in this craft beer scene in this area in particular. It sounds like you guys were pioneers a little bit into an area that probably others have benefited from.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we've been happy to, I know especially Julie, I've been with the company 3 years, we've been open 5 years now. I know that Julie's really happy to be able to provide for the whole scene. It's not just about us. But yeah, when we first opened, it was pretty fun to make history. Republic and Tacoma Park and us kind of made history together. They were the first place to order a self-distro keg from us. We were the first place to deliver a self-distro keg. So basically what it did was, so many stores and so many buyers that were having problems with the county distributor, out of stocks, trying to get special items, all that kind of stuff, we were now able to directly bring them beer. We were able to bring them beer the next day if they had a big party and they ran out, where sometimes otherwise they'd have to wait till the next week, till their next delivery day.
Okay.
So it's really opened the door. So now Republic also has an all self-distro beer list. So they were one of the first people in the county, in the area, to have an all self-distro beer list. So really excited to be able to open up that connection directly with buyers and directly with restaurants,
mm-hmm.
Not have to worry, be able to choose our own minimums, our own procedures of how we wanted things delivered. Being able to really control the beer was huge.
Cool.
Not having to send it to somewhere, not knowing how it's been treated, how it's traveling,
okay,
where it's storing, if things are getting tucked away or getting lost. So it really just allows a craft brewery to really have their hands in, which I think is what all of us want to do. We want to know exactly what's going on with the beer. We want to be very hands-on. We want to be proud of our product, and we want to be able to protect our product.
Yeah, and I would imagine the customers are going to like that too, because that they know that the beer is fresh. It's coming right from here. And
yep, we were able to, back when I first started and I was actually doing deliveries as well as sales and all that, I would be able to bring people beer that was canned that morning.
Wow.
So that was probably a rare occurrence, or probably had almost never happened before. So the phenomenon of being able, especially with some of our hoppier beers or some of our fresher styles, being able to say this was canned this morning was pretty exciting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So how many places are you distributing to now, as opposed to for your own facility, and you have a second one as well, but what about places that you're distributing to and regularly supplying
beer? Within the county or just
anywhere?
Yeah, so this past year we opened a second production facility, as you mentioned, in Riverdale Park, near the college, near UMD.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been a way for us to brew on a larger scale. The brewery is set up better. We're able to put a laboratory in. We're able to put a canning line permanently, kind of do all these things together. So now we're able to distribute much further. We're able to make more beer. So we, in all of our counties or territories outside of Montgomery County, we decided to go ahead and sign with a local distributor, Legends Limited. They're kind of an all-craft distributor, and for our brand, we thought that they would really work well for us. So now we're technically offered throughout the state of Maryland, mm-hmm. but the territories that we have kind of taken on and that we're in the field and we're promoting is Baltimore City, Anne Arundel, Howard, Frederick, Prince George's, and now we're covering all of DC, where it was mostly kind of the northern half, a few strategic accounts here and there. We were historically probably a 70-30, 70% in Montgomery County and 30% in DC. So now it's really cool to have really broadened our reach and being able to go out more into our home state, Maryland, and then DC being so close and us being so close to the border, we often kind of get lumped in with a lot of DC events and a lot of Maryland stuff. So it's a really nice way to kind of be able to spread our story and spread our beer.
Okay, that's great. Really, yeah. Expanded your footprint in a pretty, you know, short period of time.
Definitely. And I would say, I mean, just within Montgomery County itself, we probably have over 100 accounts to give you a feel for that, just in our county here.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about the thought of setting up that second location in Riverdale with that really only being, you know, a few miles from this location.
Yeah. Yeah. The spot really came together. We were actually like, we've been looking at a few spots. We were actually looking at a spot next door, but what ended up happening was kind of through the industry, through friends of friends, this company that was building out this development in Prince George's County was heard that we were looking for a space. So they kind of came together, but I guess before I'll back up a little bit, you know, we had gotten to the point where about 2 years in, maybe even right before the 2 year mark, we had kind of maxed out our capacity here, which was pretty awesome. We were brewing about 1500 barrels per year, and that was about as much as we could do. As you see when you walked around, we have other oak barrels and stuff. This was a way for us to kind of get more storage, more barrelage, if you will, outside of the tanks. But we had really maxed out, and we were kind of running into the thing where we couldn't take on any new accounts, and we saw demand for our beer. And, you know, we are really kind of proud of our story and our motto. Unified by beer is one of our taglines, kind of the idea that we want to, everyone, you know, deserves fresh beer and a range of beers. That's why we make such a broad range of beers. We want everybody to sit down and come together at the table and enjoy a beer no matter what.
Okay, yeah. That's great. So the Riverdale one, I noticed that the mayor of Riverdale Park, Alan K. Thompson, visited on Small Brewery Sunday.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, how that came about and what that experience was like.
Yeah, that must have been really cool. That was probably something that Julie and them had set up, and unfortunately I'm a little in the dark about that. But I can tell you that we have been really trying to be active with the towns, with we hold a lot of events here that are helping promote things, that are fundraisers, that are you know, anything of the sort. So I know that it's important to Julie and Emily and Jeff to work with, you know, the town and kind of be you know, and the whole state of Maryland, and really try to be proud and really try to help grow our area and be connected with the people.
Yeah, and I thought it was neat that, you know, I saw him, he heard about it, and it was something he wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
So he's like, hey, you know, I'm going to take advantage of coming out and not only supporting it, but being there for people to interact. And
it's really great.
With him. So that's pretty neat.
I agree. I mean, it's been really fun to see all the different kinds of people that have come out to support us, and different politicians and different artists and everybody. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So we mentioned, you know, Julie and Emily and Jeff as the owners. So you're a majority female and minority owned brewery, from what I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about how that adds to your story and makes you a little bit more unique.
Definitely, definitely. So, you know, the brewing industry is great. It tends to be dominated by a lot of male-dominated. Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool that I think a lot of other businesses that are women-owned or other people that align with those values, it really gives them a unique way to help tell a story about what they believe in, what their values are, and it aligns with us. And I think people in general, you know, are just excited about trying to make the playing field level and trying to, you know, make these things available to other people outside of white males. So I think it's been really huge. We've had a lot of reception for that. We've been able to do a lot of events for Women's Month during March. We've been able to align with a lot of, you know, doing donations and doing promotions and helping other facilities and other businesses that are kind of helping other women and minorities come up in the scene. So, you know, we want a diversity in beer as well, in styles of beer, as well as a diversity of people, because I think that's what really can enrich a craft beer community.
Yeah, yeah. Pink Boots?
We have been involved with Pink Boots in the past, and even more so now. We have a great new brewer who's joined our team, Lily, and so she's really been becoming involved in the Pink Boots Society on the brewing side, which has been really fun. And I think it's really cool that we now have, we promote a lot of women here. We have a lot of people in our tap room, and I think that's great. And now it's awesome to add a female to our brewing team as well. So I believe we have a brewing day coming up soon or something like that where maybe we're going to host it here. So I know it's really exciting to be a part of that and to help promote that society and just try to get other people involved in that. And let them, a lot of people don't even know about the Pink Boots Society. So
right, and that's what I was going to say. For those of us that don't, we'll make sure there are listeners that don't know really much about it, how that really helps.
Sure. So I mean, what I've been able to witness, because I've actually gone to a meeting on a separate note to help somebody do some filming there, but it was really great to witness that and to see. So I think what it really is it's a support group. You know, a lot of people, doesn't matter who you are or where you come from, if you don't know things, it can be intimidating to ask. So I think that has provided a great space for people to come together, to talk, for them to cross ideas between breweries, and also to like, pick different. I know they like have a Pink Boots like hot blend that they do, and then I think some of those proceeds go, you know, to women in need and stuff like that. So I think it's great that they're able to start kind of bring a culture out of it. Everyone was brewing different beers with the Pink Boots hot blend.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. So I think it's really just about, it's a support system. It's a way for people to get together and say, hey, you know, we're here and we matter too, and we like to brew.
Right. And I think that's great because, you know, the brewing industry in general tends to be a very welcoming, sharing type of place. But like you said, it's predominantly males. To have other females that are into that and have experienced some things, maybe they've had some unique challenges that other brewers might not have. Maybe male brewers didn't have it, female brewers did. So
sure.
It's nice that they have that opportunity to kind of share and help each other out and get more women into brewing.
Totally. I definitely think it's a safe space for people that are curious to come out and talk with other people and then, you know, feel like they're part of something. And that's an easy way to kind of get into the brewing industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's one thing if you're already in it and you're looking for support, but there's some people that maybe or just want to learn a little more about it or want to be more involved, and that could help them lead to maybe finding a career or something they're passionate about in the brewing industry.
Yeah, that's great. So you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the different styles, and at the Baltimore Craft Beer Festival, I had the Papagayo.
Oh, yes.
Which was a really unique take on a Saison because it had the Brett and the fruit, a little unusual for that style. Really good. Really, really enjoyed that.
Well, thank you.
And you're welcome. When we talked, you said that you brew a number of different styles that are a little unusual for different craft brew areas. Maybe you talk about some of those styles or why it is that you want to have those different styles represented.
Sure. So I think, you know, we have to give a shout out to Jeff Ramirez, our head brewer. I think he has an amazing talent for a wide variety of beer. Mm-hmm. Also, he got into brewing very young. Did some training in Germany, did a whole brewing academy, and I think a lot of those schools and those academies are geared towards learning the classic styles. So I think a lot of you know, the difference between kind of going that pathway versus coming into the industry as a home brewer is, you know, home brewers, you're able to do all kinds of crazy stuff on a small scale and maybe a lot more of bending the boundaries, which is totally okay. That's a part of craft beer, is bending the boundaries. But I think there's also a certain place or something to be said about where did these styles come from or where do they originate. Mm-hmm. So to talk quickly about the Papagayo and that kind of wild and or funky mixed fermentation part of our brewery, you know, making those beers takes barrel space, it takes time. You know, you're essentially having a beer sit there for 6 months to a year when most of your other beers are done in less than a month. Mm-hmm. But when we opened our doors right off the bat, Jeff brought in some barrels, and within 6 months we had our very first mixed fermentation long-term barrel aged sour. So that's definitely something unique that we do. Our barrel program in general, you know, there's a lot of people doing bourbon barrel and doing clean beer fermentation without the wild yeast and bacteria. But I think that's kind of really something cool and unique. We've been able to grow that program a little bit now that we've opened the second place in Riverdale. We freed up some space here. We're able to bring in some more oak barrels. So that's pretty unique. And another thing that kind of ties in with that is two tanks that we have. So we actually have at both locations horizontal fermentation tanks, which I think are something that not a lot of local small breweries are able to do, kind of for the same reason of putting barrels everywhere. They take up room, they're not as tall, they're not as easily to be stacked, but they are more friendly to the yeast. Actually having a wider area for the yeast to kind of move around, because as they produce CO2, they kind of float up on rafts and then they kind of fall back down. It's just like convection. So when you have this space for them to move around, they're able to produce a little more of the kind of byproducts of fermentation. And so that's really cool. So we're able to start a lot of our sour beers in there and give them more oxygen up front, give them more space, and it develops a unique character. So that being said about our barrel program, when you get to our more clean beer side, stuff that doesn't have the wild yeast and bacteria, we are doing a lot of classic styles, especially when you look at our four core beers, the beers that we do all the time. So we have an IPA, I think that's like pretty standard, but we have an ESB, so an extra special bitter. A lot of people don't even know what the ESB stands for.
Right.
So this is essentially, for lack of better words, the grandfather of IPA and of hoppy beers. When England was kind of first getting away from using wild roots and all kinds of stuff to bitter the beer and combat the sweetness of malt, they started using hops. And so to distinguish between the two styles of beer, there was a sweet ale that probably had herbs and or whatever in it, mm-hmm. and then there was a beer or a bitter. So beer technically is a term for liquid that has hops and malt in it. Otherwise, it would just be a malt beverage. So a bitter. So these were... And it has the same classification as we do with Pale Ale, IPA, Double IPA. They had an ordinary bitter, a best bitter, and an extra special bitter. And they were different classifications. Long story short, the classifications were kind of built out of tax laws. With the ESB would have been the more expensive offering, the more full-bodied offering. Also, us being in America, a lot of the other bitters are under 3 or under 4%. So we went with the ESB. But this also ties in another way. So the Lois Lord is actually named essentially for Maryland, the Calvert family. Uh-huh. They were lords, but they were the lowest among the ranking of lords. Uh-huh. And obviously, so with their, you know, English background and their taste for beer, you know, there was, without a doubt, there was some English styles of beer brewed here when they were first coming abroad. So, and on the can we have the state bird, and he's got a little ruffle and a monocle. So it's a really fun way to tie it in. But yeah, ESB, it's a really cool beer to have in my portfolio, but it takes a little love and a little understanding and a little education. So moving on to the Belgian triple. So a lot of people are doing Belgian wheat beer, Saison. You don't see people doing a triple as a year-round offering. Okay. That might be something they do in bottles, or they do a keg release in the winter. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. It definitely is a higher alcohol and doesn't fit into every scenario, but for those people that really love or grew up on those Belgian imports and Chimay and Westmalle and stuff like that, or any of the Abbey ales, mm-hmm. it's a really fun, approachable way. Most of those beers come in big bottles, so you're able to take a six-pack, spread it out, take it camping, take it to an event or whatever, and so that's really cool too. So that's just in our core beers.
Okay.
Then you look outside of that, you know, as we've grown over the years, we've done a lot of styles, and then we've kind of learned what we want to do. So we do have some beers that have kind of been retired, but some really cool stuff, like a Dunkel. You know, a lot of people are unaware of like the early dark lagers of Germany. So we used to have a Dunkel that we would do that was really fun. We've done a play on a California Common. Mm-hmm. A California Common was kind of a simple, a California Common. We've done it like a steam beer, but you can't call it steam beer. So it was a way that they would have done lagers a long time ago when they were transitioning from Germany to here. They would use those horizontals to help cool the beer down as well. So we're excited to be able to do those kind of styles. There's another style called a Kentucky Common, which was kind of an ale style that was brewed to be drank with quick consumption. It was kind of just a quick stock ale. And we did a fun spin where we did a sour version of that. So we put it into barrels. We did, it has a nice malty amber base. We put it into bourbon barrels to kind of play off that Kentucky and that kind of thing. So just a range of stuff like that. Just kind of doing some cool classic beers that, you know, some people might not know, and I like the fact that you might have to pull your phone out and kind of look that up. But I think that's fun. It makes it educational. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big component about Denison's that is educational. That's part of the reason why we do so many ranges of styles. We want people to learn about beer, because the more they learn about beer, the more they're going to order styles outside of their parameter, which is going to help enrich just the craft beer community. I think everybody, obviously IPA seems to be the big winner, but I think it's really cool and really important to also branch out and show people that craft beer can do anything.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you, because you don't necessarily know what kind of styles that you're going to like until you start experimenting with them. And sometimes it's a matter of growing a taste for it down the road. I know that for me, I spent a few years up in northern Minnesota, and you know, probably going into that, I didn't drink a lot of stouts and porters. And obviously up there with the weather, you start to understand and appreciate, you know, that beer even more, particularly in that climate. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until after spending a few years up there and then moving to a much, much warmer climate where it didn't make sense to drink stouts and porters.
Yeah.
And I found myself going, wow, I really like stouts and porters. And now I live in an environment that it's just not conducive.
Right, right.
They're really great beers. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think it's great that you're letting people experiment with different styles and maybe they haven't tasted it before and they get excited about it. And, you know, that's their new style or that's the new thing.
Definitely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, tell me that where we can find Denison's online.
Our three handles for Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter are at Denison's Brewing.
Definitely put them in our show notes and we'll have them on the
website. Sure. But we definitely have a good online presence and our website's really fun and interactive. You're able to see the team. You're able to see some about our values, you know, see all the beers that we've offered in the past and see our the events that we have coming up. We have a wide range of events and so I think we definitely have an internet presence if you want to check us out.
That's great. Well, let's learn a little bit more about you, Ben. Tell me a little bit about some of the roles that you have here at the brewery.
Yeah, it's been fun to grow and to come into it. Coming into a small company, wearing many hats, gives you a unique position to see all the sides, which I really appreciate. So when I first started out here, Julie was one of our owners. Julie Verratti was pretty much doing most of the deliveries and doing the sales. So I was kind of there to take over, but you know, I had to be able to go out during the week, do the sales. I had to be able to deliver the beer twice a week. And then on the Friday, Saturday, Sundays, I was doing the tastings. I was doing the beer festivals, the events and all that. So definitely kind of many hats. And as we've come along the past few years, we've now hired a delivery driver. And so I'm kind of focusing more on spending more of my time on the streets and doing sales, still doing a lot of events. You know, being a salesperson, you have to also be willing to build your brand outside of your work week, and so setting up a lot of beer store tastings, liquor store tastings, kind of like that, and then obviously all the beer festivals and the beer events that we do, and even some private events, you know, where people hire us out to come set up and pour beer for them and do little educational events. So it's been really fun to see all those different sides and to work closely with the owner of a company.
Well, I know that you're a certified Cicerone.
Yeah.
And for our listeners that may not be familiar with that, explain a little bit more about what that is and why that's important.
It's true. It is a fairly new program. 2008, I believe, is when it started. A gentleman named Ray Daniels, who had been a beer enthusiast, a home brewer, had really worked a lot with just trying to educate people, making sure people knew about beer and really wanted to help craft beer grow. And if it's presented in a bad light, it doesn't grow. So also just now that we have so many styles of beer and it's not just mass-produced lager, the same reason why the wine world has an expert. You know, you need to be able to navigate all these styles. You need to be able to figure out beer pairings, beer flavors, and help guide a customer or help someone train their employees. So the Cicerone program is essentially kind of like the sommelier program. It's a beer expert. And what that means is that we're going to cover the breadth of the industry. So you're tested on beer and food pairings. You're tested on beer styles. You're tested on history, brewing process, brewing ingredients. So it really kind of covers even service, even draft line technology. Learning about how all that works really kind of gives you the overarching so that you can be equipped to kind of go into any side of the industry that you might want with a very full knowledge. And what I really have liked about it, I mean, I was always passionate about beer. I was always kind of studying and wanting to learn and wanting to grow, but would only kind of find myself reading about things that were of interest to me. Mm-hmm. So the Cicerone program really kind of forced me to dig into areas where I might not have normally gone. Mm-hmm. So it really gives me a well-rounded. And now as a salesman, the way it translates for me and how it's really important for me is that I'm able to come in and if someone says, hey, something's going on with my draft system, even though it's kind of out of my scope, I've been able to help people in different situations. This gives me an edge. I've been able to come in and do staff trainings. I'll actually be leaving later to go off. We've put our beer on at a new place. I want to come in and not just say, hey, thanks for buying our beer. Let me know when you need more. Hey, thanks for buying our beer. What can I do to help you sell the beer? What can I do to help get your customers excited about the beer? So I'm able to go in, give a little quick blurb about history, give a little quick blurb about, this food item that you have is going to go really well with this, or maybe I wouldn't recommend with this. So that way they have a tool in their back pocket, they feel confident, and they're able to kind of tell our story and tell about the beer. If I get them excited about a process that we do, then they're going to convey that to the customer, which is just good for everything.
That's great. I also talked a little bit about your bio and saw that you were BJCP certified. So tell me about the certification and experiences you've had judging beers in competitions.
Yeah, judging the beer competitions has been really fun. You know, as a beer enthusiast, I really enjoy doing other activities. It's a cool way to get together with other people that you may not know or may not see. Everybody judges beer together. It's fun to sit down at a table. Say me and you could sit down at a table and we've never met each other before. But you kind of build a rapport as you do that. So I've done everything from mostly kind of homebrew competitions, but they do use BJCP for even big festivals like Great American Beer Festival, but even some smaller stuff in Maryland, there's a Comptroller's Cup, or it's kind of been named slightly different things over the years, but it was an all-professional brewery competition in Maryland, so I got to go judge that. It's really fun. Sometimes at the end, there might be some leftover beers, and people can sit around and drink together. But as far as the becoming a judge and the process behind that, they really want you to know. It's very fascinating. There's definitely an overlap with the certified Cicerone program that I was telling you about earlier, but more honed in on kind of off flavors, fermentation, and the styles and the ingredients. So you don't have to know as much about the other stuff because you're really just trying to take apart what's in the glass. Okay. So it's been really fun to learn. It forces you to learn about and judge and look at different beers in a different light. You know, it's one thing to kind of have a good idea of what a IPA is and you taste it and you say that's good, but then are you going to be able to comment on the fermentation profile? You're going to comment on the malt? Are you going to comment on the hops? Are you going to comment on how the beer came together overall? Mm-hmm. So there's an online portion that's kind of like a test, if you will, that's timed, and you have to be able to kind of finish that test in a certain amount of time. And it definitely can get very granular. They want you to know everything from even also the color, which is measured by SRM, the standard reference method, the IBUs, the international bittering units, knowing what the ranges are there. After doing the online portion, you kind of pass that, then you're ready to take the tasting portion. So you have to go in. I think they give you 5 beers. I think you have 15 minutes per beer. So it's hard kind of making sure you comment on every aspect for aroma. You can't just say hoppy or citrusy. What do you think the aroma is from the hops? What do you think is from the fermentation profile? What's from the malt? Are there any off flavors that may have come about? Did something go wrong? So that's a really cool aspect of it as well. So I think judging has just helped me dive more into the styles, have me feel more comfortable. And then it's also fun because you're giving feedback to other brewers. So you're dissecting the beer, and not only do you have to have something to say, but you need to be able to write about it well and be able to write about it so that someone else takes that sheet and can take away something from that. And in the craft beer industry, you know, we don't want to bash people if the beer didn't quite come out the way they wanted it to. We just want to help educate them. So then that's where the brewing process really comes in. You have to know maybe what went wrong. You have to kind of guess because you don't know. You're not talking to them. And then you have to kind of offer a few different suggestions. So that really helps me, you know, even when I'm just like talking to a fellow craft beer brewer or someone who's trying to do something, I'm able to offer advice. So I think it's definitely helped enrich my knowledge and just my overall like craft experience.
That's great. Yeah. And obviously it makes you more marketable and more valuable here at Denizens.
Yeah.
And so leading into that, tell me about the brand ambassador program that you just recently started.
Yeah, we're really excited about that. You know, we realized that we have some people, you have a lot of people that aren't in the industry but are very enthusiastic about craft beer and want to be involved in some way. Maybe have day jobs, but really deep down they kind of have a love. So this is also a way for us to expand our reach. You know, currently we have 2 salespeople, and then Julie Verratti is one of our owners, and she's also kind of helping with business development and helping with sales, but we can't be everywhere at once. So we're hiring brand ambassadors to be able to represent us at brewing festivals, to be able to set up and do in-store tastings for us, so that maybe we can be doing 3 or 4 tastings on a night. And then we're also, you know, able to offer them experience. They're able to kind of come in, get to know some of the people from the brewery, get to kind of do some touring, get to taste a lot of beers, and so we're really excited about that. It's very new for us, and I've kind of been helping head it up, and we're trying to seek out. So if anybody out there is interested, you can definitely reach out to info@denisonsbrewingco.com and let us know you're interested. But it's been really fun training these people. They seem very passionate. They seem, and I'm big about education. I really do like the education part of the industry, and I think maybe that's kind of why I naturally fell into that certifications, because I like talking about it and I like educating people about it, so I wanted to have those tools to do so. So it's yet another example how all those things have really come together to help me be able to train other people as well.
That's great. No, that's definitely good that you're out there educating more people. It's what we're all trying to do, is share that story of craft beer.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, once again, where can people find Denison's online?
Great. So if you want to check out what kind of things we have going on, events, just funny videos. We even have like a dogs of Denison's Instagram. But our three handles for Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter are @Denison's Brewing. So we'd love for you to follow us, for you to check us out. We're always doing some really cool events. We just did like a mural painting event. I know that our events manager was talking with somebody about potentially doing like a breakdancing thing. I mean, we just have a lot of fun, different kind of stuff. We do artisan markets where we have local artists come out, set up a little booth and sell their things. We had a cigar rolling class the other day.
I did see that online.
So just a lot of fun stuff. And if you want to, we're also giving updates about maybe, hey, check us out. We're now at this bar, or we're now at this local store that might be close to you, and now you're like, great, I can go grab my Denison's six pack down the street. So we definitely recommend you guys following us. And then we do have denisonsbrewingco.com. It's our main website. You're able to get on there and check out, there's bios about different staff people. It's kind of fun giving you an inside access, and a couple of fun quotes and beers that we've done in the past. So definitely check out our online presence.
Definitely. Well, we'll also put that on our website at sharepintpodcast.com.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, I want to thank you for your time and for sharing a pint with me.
Hey, that's what it's all about. Thank you, Jerry.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at sharepintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter @share_pint. Show notes for this episode are available at sharepintpodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin McLeod, and can be found online at incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at sharepintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@sharepintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Hulla. Prost.